5 Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. First, we're in the third week of spring, and migratory birds are coming back to Wisconsin. Many birds, like red-winged blackbirds and waterfowl, are already back. There are many more to expect as it gets warmer in the next few months. We're talking about spring birding in Wisconsin, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. What birds have you been spotting? Which ones are you looking forward to? What are your favorite birds to see this time of year? You have a favorite place to go, whether it's your backyard, a state park, you name it. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Stanley Temple is a professor emeritus of forest and wildlife ecology and environmental studies at UW-Madison, and he's a bird expert. Stan, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Rob.
I'm excited, Stan, and I'll tell you why. Following the advice of some other guests over the last year, I've at the bus stop, I don't pull out my phone. I stand there and I look around for birds. And that's been really boring because all I see is house sparrows, if I'm lucky, a crow or maybe a gull flying up high. My viewing is about to expand a lot, right?
You're right. April and May are the time for spring migrants to arrive.
Excellent. And which ones are already here that we might already be getting an eye on here in Wisconsin?
Well, I think you mentioned a couple of red-winged blackbirds come back in February. Actually, so do our sandhill cranes. And sandhill cranes are now pretty ubiquitous around the state and very noisy as they're establishing their territories. So most people are aware that they've returned. Killdeers are back. A lot of the earliest arriving birds actually do come back in late February.
Now, what divides the birds that are coming back to Wisconsin to stay and nest over the summer versus the ones that, you know, Wisconsin's just sort of flyover, stopover country for them?
Well, it all depends, of course, where they're targeting for breeding. And for Wisconsin, we actually do have a lot of the birds that we see during April and May are going to settle somewhere in the state to breed. But there are others that are headed much further north, that are headed up to the boreal forests of Canada or even to the high Arctic. So the birds that are headed for the boreal forest, some of the familiar birds might be things like white-throated sparrows that often turn up at bird feeders, broad-winged hawks, and quite a few warblers. And for the birds that are headed to the Arctic, tundra swans have already started coming through, lots of waterfowl species, and most of the shorebirds that pass through Wisconsin are actually headed for the Arctic.
I want to give a listen to some birds that we can watch out for. We've got some bird calls here. First, the house wren. All right, I've heard that sound. Stan, I don't know if I could pick a house wren out of a lineup, but tell us about the house wren.
Well, house wrens are fairly familiar to people because they often nest in the nest boxes that we put out in our yard. And they are just about to arrive. Mid-April is a good time to see them. And they're coming to us mostly from southeast, from wintering in the southeast U.S. And they're said they're very familiar because for most of us, if you put out a box in your yard, wrens are almost certain to find it. So they're a very familiar bird.
And now we'll give a listen to the eastern phoebe. Okay, again, a familiar sound. Tell us about the eastern phoebe, Stan.
Yeah, eastern phoebes are also fairly familiar because they often nest under the eaves of our house if we've got some decent habitat around our house. So again, they're familiar birds and they've already arrived. They came in early April and sort of like the house wrens, they've spent the winter in southeastern U.S. and are just arriving now.
Talking to Stan Temple from UW-Madison, it is spring. It is bird migration season. We're figuring out what to watch out for this time of year and in the month or so to come. You could join in at 800-642-1234 to report your sightings or what you're looking forward to. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Bruce is with us in Kenosha County. Bruce, hi.
Hi. I'm calling from Kenosha County. I live on a lake down here. And the last few years, during their migration, the pelicans stop in. We have about 100 pelicans in this flock that's been hanging out at our lake for a couple of days.
Have they shown up yet this year, Bruce?
Yeah, we've been watching them for the last couple of days. I haven't seen them feeding this year, but that's fun to watch them feed.
Fantastic. That's an amazing bird to see, especially with quantities of them, Bruce, right?
Yeah, it's like 100 of them, and they come sailing in all in formation, right? And then they just kind of cruise around the lake in a big group, and they rejoin each other and split up, and it's fun to watch.
Bruce, thanks a lot for the call. I don't know if people think of Wisconsin, Stan, as a Pelican State. I have seen them, not in the numbers that Bruce has, though.
Well, they're a fairly recent addition to the state. They traditionally, historically, bred further west. But certainly over the last 20 or 30 years, they've been moving east and are now, well, as Bruce said, fairly common in some places around Wisconsin. They've just arrived again from spending the winter down in the southeast U.S. And at least one explanation for the increase in numbers and their spread eastward has been the expansion of fish farming in the southeast U.S., which gives them an abundant supply of food over the winter.
Bruce, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Stan, is it common for birds to change their migration patterns over time, start to show up in places like Wisconsin where maybe they didn't used to?
Well, it does happen. And of course, we're seeing some fairly rapid changes in the migration behavior of quite a few birds in response to climate change. Mm-hmm. So the schedules on which many of the short distance migrants, the birds that are basically spending the winter somewhere in the U.S., those short distance migrants are arriving much earlier than they did in the past as our winters get shorter and spring comes earlier. So people have probably noticed things like robins, for example, are arriving very early in the year, sometimes almost 2 to 3 weeks earlier than they did in the past.
Stan, I know a big issue for various migratory birds over the years has been habitat preservation, availability of the kind of stopovers that birds need. Have we done a decent job in more recent decades of making sure that our key migratory birds have what they need?
Well, in the past, we did a very strategic job of providing stopover places for migrant waterfowl, primarily through the National Wildlife Refuge System. And it's more recently that we started to worry about stopover habitat for some of the other migratory birds. So yes, indeed, it is important. The difficulty, though, for many of our migratory birds is it's difficult to predict when and where they're going to have to settle during migration. That is often determined by the immediate weather conditions. So the strategy for providing habitat, stopover habitat for most migrant birds is to have a good diversity of habitats across the landscape rather than having specific places on the map.
Let's go back to our callers. Carrie is with us in Horicon Marsh. Carrie, are you at the marsh right now?
I'm in Horicon, yes.
What did you want to tell us about?
I joined the conversation a little late, but I just wanted to talk about the birds we see in the watery fields right by our house. There were hundreds of swans this year, many types of ducks, pelicans, of course. But this year I saw something I hadn't seen before, and I don't know if this is something that's been around the last couple of years and I just didn't notice. It's called the white-fronted goose.
The white-fronted goose, Carrie. Thanks for that, Stan. Is that somebody we usually see, Stan?
Well, white-fronted geese do turn up in migration in Wisconsin, but not that common. Not nearly as common, for example, as Canada geese. But yeah, they do turn up occasionally. And like many of the birds that you just talked about, the tundra swans and many of the waterfowl species that you're seeing there, are probably heading for breeding areas much further north of Wisconsin. So the tundra swans, of course, their name kind of gives it away. They're headed for the Arctic tundra.
Carrie, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Carrie mentioned Horicon and the Horicon Marsh there. Stan, how important is that marsh and other wetlands in Wisconsin for our birds, especially the migratory ones?
Well, Horicon, of course, is a state and federal wildlife refuge, and it was specifically created to provide habitat for water birds. And Horicon, of course, not only provides good stopover habitat for many species, but it also, of course, is breeding habitat for many. So as a very large, extensive, well-managed wetland, Horicon is a very important wetland. In fact, is already designated as a wetland of international importance.
We're talking about spring bird watching with Stan Temple, Professor Emeritus of Forest and Wildlife Ecology and Environmental Studies at UW-Madison. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We want to hear about your springtime bird sightings. What have you seen in your neck of the woods so far? Where do you go? Do you go hiking to see birds in particular environments? What questions do you have for our guest? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. Check. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation about migratory birds and spring birdwatching season. Stan Temple is with us, Professor Emeritus of Forest and Wildlife Ecology and Environmental Studies at UW-Madison. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What birds are showing up in your yard, your neighborhood? Who are you looking forward to? What questions do you have for our guest about migratory birds, their habitats, their habits here in Wisconsin? The number is 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Want to get back to some of our bird calls? Here's a listen to another one. Okay, Stan, I'm not great at identifying bird calls, but even I know that one's the whippoorwill. Can you talk about the whippoorwill?
Yeah, whippoorwill is a very distinctive call, and of course, associated with more rural wooded parts of Wisconsin. They'll be arriving in late April, and they have come a fair ways. They've come from the southern U.S. and as far away as Central America. And they are very consistent about their arrival dates. So they are pretty precise about arriving in that last week in April.
Are there other birds that have that kind of timing precision?
Well, most of the long-distance migrants, the ones that are spending the winter in Central America and South America, are much more precise from year to year about the timing of their migration, because they are using photoperiod, they're using day length as their key sort of migration clock. And that doesn't change, of course, from year to year. And they can basically time their migrations very precisely. The short distance migrants, some of the birds that we've already been talking about, of course, that winter in the US, experience North American temperature. So they often are varying quite a bit from year to year based on whether it's an early warm spring or a late cold spring.
We heard from Willem in Colfax who wanted to ask about merlins. Are they rare, he asks, or are they still around?
Ah, merlins, a favorite species of mine. I did my master's thesis studying merlins. Merlins have increased phenomenally since the pesticide era, and have greatly expanded their range into mostly the northern half of Wisconsin. But they are now becoming, you know, not an uncommon bird across the upper Midwest. And some of the birds have actually wintered with us, especially in urban areas where they are very fond of dining on house sparrows and some of the other common urban birds.
The pesticide story, when I think of the DDT era, I think mostly of bald eagles in particular. They have clearly made a comeback since that era. What other birds were hit hard then that maybe have done better since we banned DDT?
Well, we've got a bunch of them in Wisconsin. Peregrine falcons, of course, are back and nesting in quite a few places, including just yesterday, the pair that nests here in Madison laid their first egg of the year. Ospreys have increased tremendously and, again, are now nesting within sight of the Capitol. But probably for many people, the bird that is a surprising backyard bird in most urban areas of Wisconsin is the Cooper's hawk, that was really decimated by pesticides and has come back strong and found backyard bird feeders to be a very easy pickings for meals on small birds.
And speaking of backyard feeders, if we want to feed birds, or I guess the birds that eat the birds that feed on the feeder, what kind of things do you see as most helpful for birds that might need that little assist if their habitat isn't all it could be?
Well, if we focus on the migrants that are just starting to arrive, there are things you can do. We've mentioned birds like house wrens. So clean out the nest boxes and make sure they're ready for occupancy. Keeping your bird feeders going, and especially for some of the specialists like Baltimore Orioles and ruby-throated hummingbirds, put out the oriole feeders and hummingbird feeders in time. For almost all of our migrants, keep your bird bath full, because most of the birds that are migrating overnight come down, land in the morning, they're exhausted, they're dehydrated, and are anxious to find something to drink. And of course, this time of year, those birds are tired when they land, and they are easy victims for cats. So perhaps especially this time of year, keep your cat indoors. There are things that you can do in your community. Wisconsin has a wonderful program called Bird City Wisconsin that encourages communities to do things that provide habitat and other conditions that help birds. And of course, we all are probably aware that many birds meet their end during migration by running into lighted structures like buildings. So in your community, you can encourage owners of tall buildings to shut their lights off at night.
Talking to Stanley Temple, Professor Emeritus of Forest and Wildlife Ecology and Environmental Studies at UW-Madison, a bird expert, talking about spring migration season, the exciting birds showing up in Wisconsin now and in the weeks to come. Still time for you to join in with your sightings, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. I want to give a listen to one more audio clip here. We've got the gray catbird. Okay, that's kind of a fun little sound. Tell us about the gray catbird.
Well, they are a fairly long distance migrant, and they're going to be arriving in late April with that very distinctive sort of mewing call. And they've come from as far away as Central America, where they spend the winter. So like many of the long distance migrants, they tend to be fairly precise about the time when they migrate and arrive in Wisconsin.
Now, Stan, over the years, we've talked about threats to bird species. You've done work on the passenger pigeon, for example, no longer with us. Where do you look with concern now at our modern bird species? What are some of your greatest areas of worry?
Well, that gets pretty diverse, because there are so many real threats to birds these days. The principal one, of course, is habitat. The fact that human beings are destroying and altering the habitat that bird species need. We know that a disturbing proportion of the birds of the world, as well as birds in the state of Wisconsin, are suffering declines because of habitat loss. In many cases, it's things that are often not happening necessarily in Wisconsin, but things that can be affecting the birds while they're on migration or on their wintering grounds. We know that there are other things that we have done a pretty good job of taking care of. We mentioned earlier the pesticide era, when many of the top predatory birds really suffered as a result of contamination of their food chain. And that's a problem that we have more or less solved. And it's not as much of a threat to birds as it used to be. So the main focus really now is this sort of race against time to protect and manage habitat that will accommodate these birds, both on the wintering grounds while they're migrating and on the breeding ground.
On a happier note, you mentioned earlier Sandhill Cranes. I've already seen some this season. You know, my wife grew up in Wisconsin, talked about, you know, that was something you didn't see. And now we see them. That seems like a pretty good success story. Stan, do you think that example might be an inspiration for other success stories for other species?
Well, for some species, it can be. The Sandhill Crane is an example of a species that benefited from the very first federal protection for wildlife, and that was the Migratory Bird Treaty of 1918, just celebrated the centenary. It protected birds from direct killing, and sandhill cranes across the Midwest became rare and just about disappeared from the upper Midwest for the fairly simple reason that we were killing them. And for sandhill cranes, they have a very low reproductive rate, so it took them a long time to recover. But by the 1970s and 1980s, the population reached its stride and has been increasing rapidly ever since. So that Wisconsin is pretty well saturated with sandhill cranes now, and the additional birds that we're producing in Wisconsin are spreading out into surrounding Midwestern states. So we're actually sort of a source for birds recovering in other areas.
And in just our last few minutes, Stan, you've seen a lot of birds. You've studied a lot of birds. Is there something that you are excited when you get that rare glimpse here in Wisconsin?
Well, birds of prey are always my my favorite. So I'm always very excited to see birds of prey doing their thing, being predators and showing off their mastery of the air and their wonderful ability to do things in the air that we often think are not really possible. Peregrine falcons perhaps come to mind for being the fastest birds on wing and just dramatic birds to watch. And fortunately now in Wisconsin, there are literally dozens of places where peregrine falcons are nesting, where one can easily watch them. Many of the nest sites have nest cameras on them, so that if you want to tune in online, you can sort of eavesdrop on what the birds are doing.
Stan, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, you're welcome, Rob.
That's Stan Temple, Professor Emeritus of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison. He joined us for a look at spring bird watching in Wisconsin. You can keep sharing your sightings on the Ideas Network Facebook page. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time.